Eclectic.
Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry, you name it. I'm Rob Brower.
I'm Scott Davis.
And Scotty, why are you laughing?
Because I showed restraint a moment ago.
Yes, you did.
And I did not disrupt the intro.
So every once in a while, at the end of our podcast, you'll hear the three beeps, and then we'll have some outtakes. And you guys have no idea the stuff that happens off the air. Sometimes we crack ourselves up. Well, oftentimes we crack ourselves up.
And that doesn't mean it's funny.
It does not at all.
It absolutely does not.
Sometimes it's just dumb.
Yeah, most of the time it's dumb, but yes. we crack ourselves up.
And that's good. We have to be able to work together if we're going to be in such close proximity.
Yes.
Which, by the way, you can get off my lap. It's awkward and you're heavy.
Well, it's cushy.
Well, thanks. Okay, transitioning now, we have a special guest in the studio.
Yes, we do.
And he's looking at us like we're weird. He's seen it all. He's been in youth ministry a long time.
I think he's relieved I got off your lap.
I think he is too.
Yes.
But for what was really weird was for a second he was on your lap while you were on my lap.
Yes.
That's the way things go.
The tower was falling.
So it was. Yes. You ever play that game in youth ministry where everybody's sitting in chairs and you say something and if it's true for you, you move to the right?
Yes.
If it's false, you move to the left?
Yes. What's really fun is when you combine that with duck, duck, goose and shuffle your buns.
We haven't tried that yet, but we got to be careful because we'll mention some weird game and then one of us will turn it into a real game. So I want to welcome to the studio my good friend Mark Schaufler. How you doing, Mark?
I am doing awesome, and I'm already enjoying the little banner thing going on.
nice. And so you want to tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Mark works really well for a name, title, and everything else, unless it's grandkids or whatever. So
yeah.
I've been around a while.
Do you prefer Grampy, Grandpa, Grandfather,
well, here's,
Sir, Papa?
Here's what I learned. I had a buddy who became a grandfather before I did and said, so what do they call you? And he goes, whatever they want to.
Exactly.
So I went with that. So I'm Papa Mark, which is
Papa
really
Mark.
Sweet. Yeah, which is sweet.
That's dear to my heart.
My sister just had her first grandchild.
Okay.
Well, my niece.
Right.
Yeah. So my sister, going into it, before the baby was born, my sister had decided that she was going to be called Nani.
Okay.
And until I heard about it and started razzing her about, you don't get to decide what your grandchild calls you. And
that's so
if
funny.
You do decide, why in the world would you pick Nani?
Right. Well,
and I just started making fun of it and I ruined it for her.
The Chronicles of Narnia.
That's what I was thinking. Yes, there was an affinity there.
Yeah. And I went, hey, Nani, Nani, can you get me some candy, Nani?
I guess it's when you can't afford a real nanny. You go down that road. Yeah. So.
Instead of a nanny, you get a nanny.
Yeah.
It's a real fancy.
Yeah.
There you go.
At least it's not au pair. Okay, so you and I know each other
through
the National Network of Youth Workers.
Right.
And you actually are the guy that heads up and does all the heavy lifting for the Thurston County Network.
Well, it was a matter of survival 30 plus years ago. There were four of us that got together, and there were no youth ministry books, there were no websites, there was nothing. And the four of us would look at each other and go, dude, what do I do? Because we were all at different levels. And so it was kind of a survival thing. And back then, and this is really talking dark ages, if you were not of the same denomination, this was like, you know, anathema. It was like bad news. So like we got together anyway just because there weren't that many youth workers anywhere.
Wow, yeah. And so you were part of the founding members
of the
four
of us that
County
started
group.
Yeah, so, and what's really cool is two of us are still doing youth ministry.
Yeah.
And that would have been like the early 80s, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you also are an author.
Yep.
And I've got one of your latest books on discipleship. And you also run a ministry, a couple of ministries. One, you do mission trips for youth groups, and you can throw out that website and everything.
Yeah, that's just MSTGO, so like must go minus the U.
Okay.
And we've led 160 teams on every continent except Antarctica.
Wow.
So everything from construction to medical teams to outreach to church planting to peer training, just about anything. And then we do a thing called Finish the Race, which is a training program.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing that literally all over the world, too. So any way we can see youth ministry happen, it's like our mission statement is, in every corner of the globe, the gospel message and a youth ministry.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
Now, Scott, you haven't used any of Mark's materials?
No.
Okay. We're gonna have to make sure that you leave here today with some of his
Hook
stuff.
Hook me up.
There we go.
We have used your materials. I used some of your materials before I even knew you.
There you go.
And I remember after we got to talk, and I was like, man, I know. And I think I've got right here.
Oh, yeah.
Is this you right here?
Yep.
Finish the Race, Youth Ministry Checklist.
Yep.
He was publishing books in binder form back then.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
But good stuff, man. And then I have a missions.
Yep.
One.
I can see that one.
Yeah. And so, sorry, I'm turning away from the mic because the bookshelf's behind me. You've got great stuff. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is kind of from your Finish the Race to training stuff.
Right.
We just recently, a few months ago, actually, our network put on a youth leader training event called Invest. And it was a free conference for youth leaders. Bring your youth workers, your potential future youth workers, and come out and get like 4 hours of TED Talk style talks plus breakout sessions. And it was awesome and impactful. And what you chose to talk about, I'll let you share a little bit about what you talked about. And I want that to kind of be our topic. I want to carry that on a little bit today.
Well, it's one of the things that we found out early on working with kids. In my first 10-year stint at a youth ministry, I had 40 suicide attempts in those 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And that wasn't what I signed up for. I didn't know that's what youth ministry was. But those were the kids that walked through our doors. And what tends to happen is if you've got a hurting kid, who are all their friends?
Yeah.
Hurting kids. So to a certain degree, we were way ahead of the things because now I would call that normal.
Mm-hmm.
But 30 plus years ago, that wasn't quite normal. So again, no resources, no nobody. So we had to figure out on these suicidal kids, one, how to keep them alive, two, how to get them out of that mess, and then three, you know, how to be proactive.
Yeah.
So that's where we are now, is we're at that proactive stage where we can go to people who on the surface at least look healthy,
mm-hmm.
although we know in reality they're probably dying on the inside. So the topic we usually try to go with is something we call the first aid kit,
mm-hmm.
which is something we all know. You clean it out, you keep it clean, and if it's bigger than what you can do by yourself, you get help.
Okay, so that's what they talk about with wound treatment.
Yeah, exactly, because you always got to start with the known to go to the unknown. And so people are comfortable with that. They can laugh about their scars, and I'll tell stories. And then we just kind of transition, but what about the heart?
Okay.
How do you deal with the heart issues? Because the wounds of the heart are exactly the same thing. You got to clean them out. You got to keep them clean. And if it's bigger than what you can do by yourself, you got to learn to get help.
Oh, that's good stuff right there. We can just end with that right now. Thanks for listening.
Hey, you're welcome.
And stay plugged
in. So before we get into the practical steps of that, I want to hear from your heart a little bit. The first, when you guys were first starting this, before you had it all figured out, what were some of the frustrations?
Well, the frustrations, it was kind of interesting because it's easy to see surface, but it takes a while to go deep. And so we would see the surface stuff because it was consistent. Every time there was a kid to get to that point of being suicidal, it was like you could almost profile it and it would be true. But then it was like, but there was always another layer and another layer and another layer. So that was the challenge, was we'd think we'd kind of have it nipped in the bud, and then it wasn't. And so finally we got down to the base, but that took a while for all those dots to connect for us. And so we were able to help kids kind of like get them out of that mess, but we really didn't necessarily deal with the root issues right off the bat. And eventually we got those figured out. And then the other frustration is that nobody wants to talk about suicide.
Yeah. Right?
Okay, bury your head in the sand. And there's an urban myth out there that says if you talk about it, people will do it. So in the public school settings and even in Christian school settings, I've had it where the administration or teachers will say, yeah, but if we talk about it, aren't they more likely to do it?
Mm.
And, of course, the reality is if you don't talk about it, yes, they will.
Yeah. So there's that Netflix show out, 13 Reasons Why.
Right.
And it is polarizing people in youth ministry. There are some that say that is absolutely the worst thing. Kids are contemplating suicide now from watching the show, and it's giving them reasons to. And then there are other people that are saying, hey, this is great. We're finally talking about it, and we developed discussion guides to go through it with our teens, and we're actually asking families to watch the show with their kids, and then we're talking about it at youth group. And so I remember I went to a continuing education seminar on suicide, and that's exactly what they said. They said talking about it isn't going to make someone, and it blew my mind because they said, you know, if you have somebody that says they're contemplating, you need to find out if they're serious or not and ask them question like, so if you were to do it, how would you do it? And I was like, what? you can't ask a kid that, because then they're going to form an idea, and, you know, and... but she explained why. She explained why that is, and you can use that as a tool to gauge, well, are they really serious? Have they planned this out? If they say, I'm going to take my dad's revolver, he never locks it up, I know exactly where the ammo is, and my parents are gone at this time, and this one I'm going to... Then you know, okay, this
red
kid
flags.
Has thought it through.
Yeah, red
He's
flags.
Got a plan, and he can actually act on that plan right now.
Right.
And so you got to do something. So, Scott, have you had any dealings with the show yet?
I haven't personally dealt with kids who've watched the show on from a negative perspective yet. Mm-hmm. I'm like dealing with it, except for the fact that one thing I do know is there's a great number of kids in my youth group who have watched it, who have begun watching it, or have been watching it for a while, with no knowledge of the adults in their lives around them.
Okay.
It's been in a vacuum without any kind of conversation around it, and that's the part that makes me scared, that makes me nervous. I personally haven't watched it yet. I'm kind of in that boat with you, but I'm reserving a certain amount of judgment on it, but I do have a negative twist on it from the perspective of that I don't think it's healthy when the kids are watching it on their own, because it's popped up on Netflix and it's the popular thing to watch, but they're doing it without conversation about the topic. That's where I think the real danger comes in.
Well, and especially because I think kids have 20/20 vision, but they don't have 20/20 understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so they see stuff crystal clear, but they don't know how to process it. And for me, that's been the thing when we're working, let's say, with a youth group where a youth pastor is concerned because he has kids. He knows they're not doing well. I don't walk in and say, hey, guys, I'm here. I'm the expert. Everybody here is messed up. I'm going to fix you tonight. Well, it's like kids don't respond to that. So I've learned a backdoor like they do. So what I'll do is I'll say, hey, how many of you have friends? Mm-hmm. And you're concerned about your friends. Well, mm-hmm. hands go up. I say, okay, great. Here's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to get to learn something so that you can help your friends. And then you walk them through, because if you walk them through the process of it, it makes sense to them. They can relate to it.
Yeah.
They've seen themselves on it. And that whole interactive piece, then it kind of takes the mystery away. Because I think that's part of it, is that, you know, we do have an enemy who comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and he's pretty good at it. But if you unfold his schemes, they kind of fall apart.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's been the cool thing, is to watch. Like, I've done it public school settings where I'll do, like, say, five classrooms in a row. And I had one day where I had three kids come up and talk to me, you know, from those, with that little three-minute window you got between classes. And one was going to take his life that weekend, and the other two were worried either about a sister or a family member.
Yeah.
And that's out of 125 kids that had the guts to stick around and talk.
Yeah. Now, I know the answer to this, Mark, but I'm going to ask you. So, what, you've got like a PhD in counseling or something, right? Because
whatever, you know, I had learned it the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so, and the reason I ask that is because I think a lot of times youth pastors and youth workers feel like, I can't talk to a kid about that. I can't talk to them about their problems. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a... Now, there is a time when we do have to say, hey, this is too big for us and we need to, but we can start the conversation.
Yes.
And who better? A therapist sitting in an office that doesn't know this teen at all, or somebody that they interact with on a weekly basis.
Even if they're going to meet with a therapist, they need to have those people who are invested in their lives for the long term walking the journey with them. So if I hit to a point with a kid that it's kind of like the wound care thing. You know, it's not just for themselves to realize that it's bigger and they need to open up to somebody to get help. I need to see that, okay, this one is bigger than what I can do on some levels for this kid. And so I need to send this kid to help that I can't provide him. But I'm not abandoning the kid. I got to walk the journey with this kid, because when he's done with the therapy, he needs to know that there's a place that he's loved and accepted.
Well, one of the things we teach the kids, and this is because usually they end up being the point person with a friend or whatever, but we say, hey, everybody can help create a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about who's in the safety net. And a lot of times they'll come up with three or four different people who might be in it. But we try to expand it, and we say, you know, coaches, pastors, you know, family members, teachers, counselors, try to make it as big as we can. Because if you've got a kid who actually gets to that point of potentially being suicidal, nobody has 24-hour day access to the kid.
Yeah,
nobody.
Right.
You know, and sooner or later, everybody's out of town. Sooner or later, everybody's cell phone didn't get charged that day. And the kid needs a big safety net. So I always encourage people, whether they're parents or youth pastors, is one of the first things you do when you get into a new community is figure out who your safety net is. Even if your kids are doing great, Find out who the go-to people are in the counseling world at all the different levels. Find out who the counselors are at the local schools. Know these people, you know, before.
Connect to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Reach out and say, hey, we just moved to the area. My kid's in your school, and I want to meet you.
Exactly, because if you know who the counselors are, that's always the biggest challenge on anything is talking to a complete stranger.
Yeah, yeah. And like you just said, not just be, you know, not only if your kid is struggling with stuff, but regardless, because even, you love and care about your
kid. Exactly.
And
even if you've got a healthy kid, they've got unhealthy friends.
Yeah.
And at some point, you're going to need to be able to be that one that says, hey, let's go talk to whoever. And that's that whole idea of if it's bigger than what you can do by yourself, get help.
Yeah. Well, and you send a message to those people, the counselor at the school, the teachers, the coaches or whatever. You send the message that, you know, you're not an absent parent. Right. You're involved, and lines of communication are now officially open. And even for small things, it allows for good mutual communication about your kid's life.
Yeah.
So then you're able to catch things when they're small issues before they become big.
And I know there's this kind of stigma of the separation of church and state, and there are some youth workers who say, oh, well, I can't bring church into the, you know, it's hogwash, because the bottom line is we all love these teens and we want what's best for them, and especially the counselors and the administrative staff. We had a middle school counselor come here and talk to our youth leaders and do some training on how to work with kids who are troubled, and how to identify and then how to approach. And you know what? It turned out that she was also a Christian, but you know, every counselor that I've talked to, even if they don't believe the same things that I do theologically, they still love these teens and want what's best. And if a youth pastor, youth worker comes and says, hey, you know, I'm working with teens, they're like, great, how can we partner?
Well,
that's their
comment. And what it can look like, we had several situations where a gal would be really struggling. So I would call the school on Monday morning and say, hey, so-and-so had a bad weekend. And so I would say, has she signed up for counseling yet? And they would go, yeah, she has. And then they might call me on Wednesday, maybe even the same week, and say, hey, we think she's got some pills or something, but she won't talk to us. Can you come in and talk to her?
Yeah, exactly.
And we tag teamed, not only in her, but on tons of kids. We had one school where they called me one day just out of the blue, and they said, hey, here's the deal. All our counselors are in training day.
Yeah.
And we got a kid who's really messed up sitting in the office. Can you please come? We know what you're going to say, but can you please come to our school, to our counseling
room, how powerful.
And talk to that kid?
Yeah, to recognize that you're there to help, and let's get over this hump. So so let's go back to the wound care real quick. In the time remaining, you want to give us some practical steps. We obviously know there's a need, and so for somebody who's never done this, what's their jumping on point and where do they go?
Right. Well, first off, wounds come from a myriad of sources, and sometimes they're even needed. In Proverbs, it says, you know, the wounds of a friend can be trusted. So you've got wounds that you need to hear because you just don't want to hear it. But then you've got nasty people out there that just do ugly things.
Oh, yeah.
So you got a full range in between. But when you get wounded, it's the same treatment. You got to clean it out, keep it clean, bigger than what you can do by yourself, get some help. So the clean it out process is, and this is, again, the resistance piece. It's like, I remember when my kids were little, if they got a sliver, they didn't come running in. Hey, daddy, will you dig this out?
Yeah.
It was avoidance, okay? You talk to a kid on the ground who's just crashed and burned, and you go, you okay? And they go, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Even though there's a growing puddle of blood coming out from underneath them, right? So we resist, but that first one is 1 John 1:9. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us. Because what happens is when you've been wounded, sometimes you're partially at fault.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Okay. And even when you're 100% innocent, when it's been that nasty person that really did something evil, you feel at some point it was your fault.
Yeah.
And so when you ask for forgiveness, that takes care of the guilt and the condemnation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one. And again, not easy for us to do because we want somebody to pay. We're mad at somebody, whatever. The keep it clean is even harder. In Matthew 5, Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, you know, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. He goes, I'm going to flip it around on you. I want you to love your enemy and bless those who curse you.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge. When you've been wounded, to pray for somebody, and not the God, I hope they die in the road prayer, but, you know, actually a blessing prayer. But what that does is that keeps it clean. So instead of every time you think of that person, you're re-wounded, now you re-bless. And that allows that wound long enough to heal, because no wound heals overnight. There is no zap wound healing prayer you can pull off. It takes time. You know, and I know from personal experience, when you've had a deep physical wound, it's literally years before there's full recovery. And if you've had a deep emotional heart wound, it's not a prayer away. It's going to be a while, you know. Yeah. And that's where then, if it's bigger than what you can do by yourself, get some help kicks in. Because in Galatians 6:2, it says, bear one another's burdens, mm-hmm. and so fulfill the law of Christ. So again, every one of those steps, simple but not easy. Because we resist confession, we resist praying for our enemies, and we resist asking for help.
Yeah.
But when you make that a lifestyle, in the long run, because it's kind of fun. I look at my body, which has got a few scars on it, but I can smile when I tell every story.
Yeah.
Because it's a healed wound. You know, but how many of us know somebody who can't talk about something because it's still a raw wound, even though it happened decades ago sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's good stuff. So how do you, as a youth worker, begin to identify for someone else whether they're getting to that third stage of it's too big to handle for themselves?
Well, a lot of times it's just the progress they're making. Let's just say the kid opens up and says, hey, this is what I'm struggling with. And I mean, there's a full list of the uglies out there and everything in between. How are they doing the next day? How are they doing the next day? Yeah. And just the fact that they got to the point of actually talking to me, then I will get to a point with them. And I tell them straight up front, because a lot of times they'll say this, hey, I've got something to tell you, but promise not to tell anyone.
Yeah.
And the first thing I say is, I can't make that promise.
Right.
I said, if I need to get you help because I can't do it by myself, then that's what we're going to do. So it's like the groundwork is already set. They know that's a possibility. And I've never had a kid not talk to me. You know, they never shut down and go, well, dude, if you're going to talk to people, then I'm not, you know.
Well, because they've come to that place where they're ready to talk.
Yep.
But they're still throwing the condition out. But the condition doesn't really, I've never had the experience of somebody
they get to that
suddenly
point.
Shutting down. Yeah.
Well, and the thing I've learned too is that now, and of course this is the challenge of having been doing it for so long, is I can spot kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get into any of those topics, you know, the wounding, forgiveness, giving forgiveness, all that kind of type stuff, at a certain point you can tell who's struggling with that concept. And so then it's like, it'll be the one-on-one thing where you just, so how you doing? You know, how you doing? That whole deal. And when you start going down that road, you can tell just by how they respond.
Man.
If they're not doing well. Man. And so that's the thing, that once you kind of get to that point, of course, then now we got to set the whole machine in motion and get this kid some help.
Yeah, absolutely. So other than your own books, if you had to recommend one book out there for dealing with hurt and whatnot, which book would it be?
It would be called Hurt.
Chap Clark.
Yeah, he does a real good job because he looked at a big picture and got the same kind of answers that we've gotten. He's probably did it more in a clinical way, whereas I was more in the trenches way. Mine's just been because not only have I, you know, worked with kids here in the States, but just as an example, I've spent about 8 months in Poland.
Yeah.
Almost exclusively speaking on these issues in public schools.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like in a 6-week period, I'd speak 90 times.
Yeah.
And the kids over there, a little bit more innocent and naive than they are here, so they read even easier.
Okay.
In the sense that you can spot these kids and what they're going through. And then they talk to you afterwards.
So this is the last question. I'm looking at the clock here, and we're getting to the end time. Well, not like...
The end.
Not Revelation.
The end times, but the end time. Okay. So so as you're working with hurting kids,
right,
what's something that you do to help guard your heart? Because I imagine that if you're speaking in schools and kids are coming up to you that often, that it could start to become heavy and burdensome.
Right. Well, and I think the key is that I know I'm in a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I work with the public schools, I know the counselors are there. I know the teachers are on board.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever we need to get on board, we can do that. And so to a certain degree, even though it can look really scary from the outside, I just play a role in it. And I trust the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They're already doing overtime with this kid anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm just getting to add something to make that work even better.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Oftentimes we take it upon ourselves to do all the work. And we don't exercise our faith.
No.
I found that not just when it comes to hurting teens, but, you know, in programming. You know, how often do we plan the perfect youth ministry event to the T, and then, you know, storm hits and kids are like, hey, we're not going to be a youth group tonight. You're like, oh, man, I did all that work for nothing. Yeah. So, Mark, hey, thank you so much for being here.
Welcome.
This is great stuff.
Thank you.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, to book you to come and do training or purchase your material or anything, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. Just go Mark, M-A-R-K, at mstgo.com. So, again, must go minus the U.
Awesome. Awesome. And if you have any questions or comments or you want to chime in and become a part of this conversation, feel free to hit us up. You can visit our website. That is eclectic.com, E-K-K-L-E-C-T-I-C. And you can find us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/ I am eclectic. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob.
I'm Scott.
Stay eclectic.